I'm Matchmaker Maria, the founder of Agape Match. For over a decade, I've combined four generations of family matchmaking tradition with modern relationship psychology, behavioral science, and dating trends. With this unique expertise, I answer your dating and relationship questions and interview experts to give you the tools to find or keep the love of your life. This is Ask a Matchmaker. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. I'm your host, Matchmaker Maria, and I am super proud of our co-host this week, our guest on the couch, Dr. Heather Brown. She's a psychotherapist based out of California. She is the reframe queen. So we have a problem, we reframe it, we find the solution. I love it. She specializes in couples communication and intimacy, grief and loss, spirituality and faith, and she transforms lives into expressions of beauty and joy. And she just wrote the book, Speaking with the Heart. Just came out 2 months ago.
It did.
It has like, I mean, this is like the ultimate dating book. Because if you even go through like the chapter outline, if you've ever had a question of like, oh, what is a love language? What is an attachment style? What is conscious communication? It's like, pick your dating lingo. It's all listed here. You just go to that chapter and learn.
Yes.
But I feel like this book is the kind that you read from cover to cover.
It's set up that way.
Yeah.
But also some people have told me, I want to go for the nugget, like giving and receiving. I don't know how to do that. So they read that first and they say, and then I'm going to go back and read the whole thing. So anyway, it works for you. You don't have to go through, but I think every chapter I wrote is important.
I think so too. So,
yes.
So tell me, so we're going to call you Dr. Heather.
Sure.
That's what you told me to do.
I appreciate it.
All right. Dr. Heather, tell us a little bit more. You know, you're in psychotherapy. Tell me about your journey to this book.
So in a nutshell, my mom was a paranoid schizophrenic. And
in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. And so living with someone who lives in a different reality, I got this amazing awareness that no one really understands the other person's reality. And the key is to try to connect. We instead say, you don't understand me, you don't get me, which we never really can. And there was a moment where there were helicopters flying over the house. She thought that they were coming to get her. My dad said, you know, Ginny, it's all in your head. You're crazy. And I looked at her and thought, like, she's losing it. He's not helping. So I'm 12. I grab my little blue blankie, throw it over her head and say, they're not going to get you. They're not going to get you. She comes out and looks at me with eyes that say, you believe me, which I didn't. But I believed she believed her reality and no one else did. And in doing that, I saw that she felt love. She felt a little safer. And I thought, oh my God, I've unlocked like this beautiful truth. If I offer compassion, right. If I try to connect in the way that you need, then whatever the specifics of your reality are, aren't quite as important or problematic because you feel that I love you and you feel that I care and you feel that I'm trying to connect with you in a way that helps you in your reality. So I couldn't join my mom. I don't know where the hell she went, but she felt like I was there with her.
Right.
And I went, this is the key to relationships. And we start with words and I throw out words at you and I think you're going to understand me and I think you're going to understand my heart and you totally don't. You veer off here and you veer off here and I attack you here and I blame you here. And I'm like, oh my God, we do this all wrong. If I start with, I care about you, I care about our relationship.
We got to talk about this really difficult thing. Like, how much is the wedding going to cost?
I want to get through this well. And how do I help you in what you need? And then the people says, well, I've got a problem with money. Like, my dad didn't take care of me when I was a kid. So if we don't spend a lot of money, now I'm going to be nervous. You start to find their challenges. And those are the triggers. Those are the places that are problematic. So if you find out I'm scared here, I'm worried here, I'm anxious here, you can say, well, how do I help you in this? Because I don't want to make this worse for us.
To go back to, you know, you just mentioned that your mom was a paranoid schizophrenic. Was she, I have a few questions for you.
You got it.
Okay. Did that language exist then? Like, you just gave us a title.
It did when she was institutionalized.
Oh.
They said what it was. But I didn't know what was wrong other than
she had a different reality.
And you could tell. Like, she became Judy.
sometimes. And it's like, what the hell is going on?
And people, she didn't let anyone see her as Judy except my sister and I, except for poor Mr. Chen, the laundromat man, when I was 8. And he approached her, you know, Virginia, how are you today? And she said, I'm not Virginia, I'm Judy. And he said, Mrs. Mackerline. She said, I'm not Mrs. Mackerline, I'm Judy. Virginia's gone away for a while, she'll be back. And he looked at me and his like whole face flooded. And I'm like, oh, he doesn't like this either. And then he came up at the end of us doing our laundry and looked at me and said, are you okay?
So was that your first realization that like something might be wrong with mom?
Absolutely.
I mean, at the laundromat.
Yeah. Because she didn't, I think she kind of kept us away from spending time with other families a little bit. Maybe it was self-protection. Right. Maybe it was her paranoia. But the time in the laundromat when Mr. Chen looked at me and said, are you okay? And I looked at him. What does an 8-year-old do? Huge smile. You know, and I went, I don't know. And I just hugged the laundry to my chest and we walked out and then nothing was said. So no one talked about it. I used to feign injuries and like hand the doctor a note or try to hand the doctor a note. Something's wrong with my mom. She'd grab the note and then I'd get in trouble.
You're the youngest of two? Mm-hmm. It was just you and your sister?
Yeah, and my dad.
And your dad. Mm-hmm. And how old were you when your mom was institutionalized?
15.
And your dad helped make that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I really was kind of the parent.
Sure.
I really was the parent all along. But he was there in the car. I was the person who actually did it. It was bizarre. They asked me, my mom was there, my sister was there, my dad was there, my mom's lover was there. I was 15 at the time, and they looked at me and said, do you think your mom could kill herself? And I said, I don't know. I think anyone could. And they grabbed this straight jacket and put her in it.
I mean, I don't know is also an answer, right?
Well, I couldn't know for sure, and she'd been writing suicide notes, and that's why we were there. And so they like put her in a straitjacket. She was screaming at me, tell them I won't. It was like such a horrible moment. I'm like, Mom, I love you, but I don't know. I don't
and
know.
And you're the youngest sibling here. Like, what was the oldest sibling doing?
Everyone was, this is me. So I hope this doesn't sound judgmental. We were all whacked. Like, we all didn't know what was going on. We were all so scared. We were all so overwhelmed. And I think the doctors looked at everybody in our little group and thought, this one seems the most able to answer this question.
Right.
My sister, bless her heart, you know, she was dating and hanging out with boys and partying to just not deal with it. Dad was a workaholic and I was home, like trying to keep everything afloat. And that was just my role. But it also gave me a really unique opportunity to try to understand my mom a little bit, try to align with how could I help a little bit. And it opened up the door for me knowing like this is the work I am to do.
And that's what influenced you then to go to college, study what you studied?
A little bit, but not quite. Oh. So after she died, our family completely fell apart. My dad just said, it's over. My sister went off with boyfriends and I'm like, I need help. And they're like, no, you're okay.
How old are we talking about now?
16.
Oh my gosh. So she passed away right after that?
Yeah. A couple months. It didn't do any good. So it's very hard to get a paranoid schizophrenic to take medication. It's very hard for a paranoid schizophrenic to get help.
Right.
So she came out and did no good. It kept her alive for a couple days. She stayed alive for a couple more months. And then that was it. But so I wanted to do theater because I wanted to not have my life. And I loved it. It was this gorgeous escape. And so I wanted to do theater, but I'm really smart. And my dad, bless his heart, was scared to death for me to go into theater. Mm. So he used to set up interviews with people who were influential because I live right by Hollywood to have me audition. And I thought I was auditioning for a part. I was auditioning actually for them to tell me not to pursue theater. And everyone said, Fred, leave her alone, let her do it. And he couldn't because it was so impractical. And it's 6 feet tall. Mm. It is. So I said, I'm doing it, Dad. And he said, I will not support you. And I said, fine. And I paid for myself, left, borderline disowned, and thought, like, I get to live my life now. I took care of mom forever. I get to try to figure out my life. And then I pursued that for years. I was very good, and I am 6 feet tall. And so one day, God slapped me across the head and said, instead of trying to help, instead of being someone who you're not, how about you help people be who they are to be?
Mm.
And I went, I have no answer to that. But yeah, because that is really what I've always done. And so I was working in a group home with teenage girls because my heart was trying to give youth a life. I reached out to 3 colleges and said, I put myself through undergrad. You need to give me a scholarship. And 2 said no. 1 said, no one's ever asked this. And I said, I will do everything. I will clean your shoes. I will clean the toilets. I will file everything. I'm supposed to be a therapist. I'm not going to go further into debt to do this. Please. And the president said, be a great therapist. I got a full ride scholarship for my master's.
Wow.
And it was gold, gold. And I have loved the process.
And you've been working now for over 25 years.
Yeah, this is my 28th year being a therapist.
Wow.
And I love it. And I'm the gift from my mom is huge.
In what way?
Because I connect.
Mm.
And I find out people's stories. And I say, well, okay, so you chose all these things. You did all these things because of how you were raised and what you needed to do to survive, like I did. But it's not working now. So we don't have to hate that part of you. We don't have to beat this part up. We actually need to love it and say, oh my God, addiction, you helped me like numb out for this long. But now this isn't helping me. So I need to figure out something other than you right now. But I'm grateful for what I learned to this process. We tend to attack ourselves and beat ourselves up for who we are right now because of what's happened. But since this moment is the only moment where we can change anything, if we say, okay, I weigh 300 pounds, that has served me in whatever way. But today I'd like to start to change things.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do today? Stop hating ourselves, hating our bodies, putting ourselves down, telling ourselves we don't deserve, we don't. Why? Like, if no one's going to love you, dear God, I, our communication in our head with mm-hmm. ourself is more than any communication with anybody else that we could ever have. It better be beautiful.
It's so funny.
It better be loving and supportive.
It's so funny you mentioned that because yesterday, so I want to talk about communication and like the realities and setting expectations. But, you know, yesterday a person sent me a screenshot of an exchange that happened online. You know, I guess they matched each other.
Okay.
And she replied to him. She was the first one to message, which I think is great. But she said, how lucky of you to have matched with me. And he replied back, oh, I didn't realize that this was a prize. And she goes, you know, and then he replies again. He goes, I mean, I guess I could also say you're lucky to match with me too. And she goes, oh, it's just she replies back. It's just a opening line I like to say just to see how people would react. And he's like, that's a really odd thing to test people on.
I agree.
And he kind of like knocked off, right? And so she sends me the screenshot. She does. And she says to me, looks like I dodged a bullet. And I replied to her and I said, I actually think you're the bullet.
Good for you, because I agree.
Right. And I said to her, like, first of all, humor is no one knows you. It's really hard to have a sense of humor online when nobody knows you.
Yes.
You know, it's like it's on text. How lucky of you to meet me. Like, this sounds like something that Michael Scott would write, you know, from The Office to someone. And I said to her, like, you're the bullet in the situation, not only because you're starting off with a line that, you know, I don't even know your sense of humor. Like, mm-hmm. Where are we coming with this? But then in the second response, you say to him that this is a game. You know, you're saying, I like to see how people reply. This is a game to you.
Right.
And this person might be actually looking for a partner. So he's now completely disinterested.
Yeah.
And she never thought of it that way. She goes, oh, thank you. I never thought of it that way. And I said, you know, next time you're texting a guy, just compliment him. Guys, as for all the women who are like, I hate it when a guy says, hey, beautiful, or hey, cutie, men love that shit. We've done so many focus groups lately. And like the one thing that men love to hear is that they're cute. So it's like, if you want to message a guy first, I encourage you to find the photo where he looks really cute and say, hey, you look really cute in this photo. Where was this photo taken? There's a perfect icebreaker. It gives you a little nice little compliment and it gets a conversation going.
You look great in the football jersey. I love football. Let's go to a game.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Oh, I like that. That's like a little, that's nice, nice and forward, and a date comes out of it. But you get what I'm saying? It's like not a game.
Yeah.
I'm not testing you. I'm not showing like, oh, I want to show that I'm confident.
I just used to give a bullet. You know? I used to be a bullet.
Tell me about your bullet.
Oh, and I look at it now. I'm like, oh my gosh, but I have to be gentle with myself.
I can't wait to see the cringe on camera. Let's go.
So I used to literally say to gentlemen, I'm embarrassed to say this. Forgive
this
me, listeners.
This is a safe
but
space.
This is true. This is my truth. I own it. I used to literally say, all I need is for someone to think I'm always adorable. And they would say almost every single time, I don't think that's going to be so hard. And then I'd say, oh.
Why are you infantilizing yourself?
Well, so after a while I went, dear God, Heather, what are you doing? You're basically telling the man, I need you to lie. And I need you to see me in a way that's completely not true.
Yeah.
I wish I could go back to those guys and say, like, what really went on inside of you when I said that? Because if a guy said that to me now, I'd say, I'm not going to. When you're vomiting in the toilet, you're not adorable, but I will still be by your side wiping it up. But there was this part of me that felt like I need to try to like tantalate you and I need to feel good about who I am. So I'm going to tell you that you need to do this for me. And I didn't realize it for a while. And as soon as I did, I thought, oh, that line's never coming out again.
Do you find, now that you said that, and thank you for sharing that.
Ugh.
But do you find that in 2024, how that, what you just said, how that could intersect with like the current conversation? I don't really like participating in. I can't believe I'm even bringing it up right now. But like, I hear a lot of the chatter from people who don't work in the dating industry or in therapy, but like work, you know, just are kind of like talking, talking heads on TikTok and Instagram, where they use words like being in your feminine or being in your masculine.
I kind of cringe.
Me too.
Toxic and narcissistic, you know, victim. I kind of cringe. Imposter syndrome. I kind of cringe because I think we are creating labels for ourselves that are massively problematic. Like every single person's narcissistic. No, we all have narcissistic tendencies. Are we at times guilty of something and we need to take responsibility for it? Yes. Am I always adorable? Hell no. But we do this stuff and then we're caught and then we mess ourselves up because now if you don't see me that way, now there's something wrong with you. What the hell? I might be being nasty to you. And I want someone who would say, like, Heather, like, cut it
out. Yeah.
Like, I got feelings here. Something happened to me early on when I started dating. It took me about a year after Ted died to even be open to it.
Hold on.
I'm a widow.
So Dr. Heather is a widow.
Yeah, 10 years out, almost. And it took me about a year. My kids were young. I had to raise them on my own. It was unexpected. Just wasn't ready. But I went out with a guy and he told me on the second date that his children were 8 and 10.
Okay.
And I went, with all due respect, I'm out.
Why?
Because my kids were 14 and 17 and they had both said, Mom, like, please don't date someone with someone younger kids. Like, we're all you have. You give us so much. You would be amazing stepmom, but we really want you to like be able to have some time where your focus is just you and a guy with someone who's older. Part of it was they wanted to be my babies and to not have someone younger. But he responded the way I know why my kids said it. He said, please don't step out. Like, you're amazing. Please don't step out. You would be the best stepmother. And I said, and this is the reason I
Did
need
they
to
not
step
have
out.
Moms?
They had a mom, but it wasn't a healthy relationship. Mm. And he saw me raising my kids on my own, providing for the whole family.
Oh, so he was looking for like another parent, co-parent, not necessarily like another partner.
Yes. And I saw it and I thought, like, my kids have such a long path ahead. I need to not step into it like stepmom right now. But it woke me up to something that your listeners I'm sure, really think about, but so important. He was ready for marriage. Mm. I was just starting dating for the first time in 27 years. I wasn't certain what I needed. I wanted to date. And when I saw him already saying beautiful things, looking into, like, I want to really commit to getting to know you, I thought, oh my God, I am so not ready for this. And that's a huge problem in dating. It's, where are you? Are you wanting to date? Are you wanting sex? Are you wanting a short-term relationship? Are you wanting long-term? Do you believe in marriage? Do you want kids? And so many people think the guy is hot, think the girl is beautiful, have common interests, enjoy each other's personality, mm-hmm. but don't talk about those really important components. And sometimes it's the wrong time.
What wrong components?
Like that guy wanted marriage.
Right.
He'd been single for 7 years.
Oh, okay.
I was just starting dating. I'm like, who's a man at 50? I don't know. Right. I've only known my man. And so right. I was truly checking out the field. And so I wasn't ready for that. A lot of people think they want relationship. You probably see this a lot. Mm-hmm. And then after a month, mm-hmm. 6 weeks, there's something, a little pocket in that 4 to 6 week span, I find, in dating, where all of a sudden they find all the problems. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, all these red flags, I'm pulling away. And I'm like, oh, you're scared. You're just scared. All those good qualities are still there. Like, these things that are red flags, are they really? Or are you making them red flags? And then I start to question, is it that you're not ready to commit? And so many people say, oh, no, no, it's not that. I'm like, think about it. Is it that? And a lot of times it is.
I find the other, like, I acknowledge what you're saying. I also find the other side of that, where someone is dating someone who wants a relationship. They're ready. They know what a red flag is. They know what it's not, you know?
Yeah.
And then they're dating someone who is what you just described. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't understand. Like, why are they not? I've told them my expectations in communication. I've told them I want them, like, I want to see them at least twice a week. Mm-hmm. Why aren't they doing this? And I'm like, sounds like they're not ready.
Right.
Right. Or sounds like they might, and it might not even be about you. It's all them.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost always not about you.
Well, and that's why timing is so important.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably one of the reasons why what you do is so much more effective, because online, you don't know. I went with a guy who said he was divorced. And then at our sixth date, he was a pastor. He said if he signed the documents, he would have to step down from the altar. And I said,
why are you dating?
No, I said, if you told me you've been divorced for 9, I'm a marriage therapist. I don't go out with people who are married. Right. And I said, what do you mean if? And I said, he said, well, I'm biblically divorced. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? I said, I've been kissing a married man. And that was a personal vow I said I would never do. And you violated that for me. So online, you don't really know what you're getting. I think with what you do,
yeah,
it's a lot closer, which is important. They're also a way bigger investment.
Yeah, that's, I think, what deters people. Because we do have a, like, don't lie to us clause in our contract.
Absolutely.
And it's actually, there's two clauses in the contract. One is like, you know, what you're saying has to be true. Mm-hmm. But also, have you used any other matchmaking services? I actually have that as a clause in my contract, which is fine if you have. I just need to know which ones, because it can't overlap our recruitment methodologies too, you know? So if I, for instance, know that you hired one of my affiliates, I'm going to call my affiliate and be like, what have you done? So I know where to pick up off from.
Right.
And there have been instances where clients have hired us where they don't disclose. And then there's actually happened a couple years ago where a person hired us and 4 other services.
What?
At once.
Seriously.
And all of us, because we're all in a group chat, you know, we all know each other, most of us, you know, like, I don't talk to all the matchmakers, but I do talk to enough, you know. And I was like, hey, I'm looking for a person. This is what, and they're like, is your client this guy? And I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, he's hired me too. And then I'm like, oh, I wonder who else he's hired. Because if it's 2, then there's always more than one, right?
For sure.
So we're going down the line. I was like, how are we going to recruit for this guy? Like, it's not to say that we all have the same recruitment methodology. We don't. We're all very different services.
But there's gonna be crossover.
There's gonna be crossover. And it's like, okay, who did you interview? So that, because what if I already set them up on a date? So you have to now tell women, have you gone out with this client already? You know, like, it's
well,
like.
Well, I think about psychologically from his perspective, where my head goes psychologically is I don't really think you're going to be successful for me. So I'm going to hire you and you and you and you. And then my head goes to, well, every date I'm thinking, yeah, but I don't know, this isn't quite working. So this person's probably better. So I'll check out his check.
It's so funny that that's your perspective. My perspective is 1000% different. It's all like, I've hired multiple services because I really don't want to take ownership for why I'm currently single. So I'd rather be able to tell all my friends, look, I hired 5 matchmakers and I'm still single. You know, there's just nobody for me. That's always been my perspective.
But I'm sure there's a lot of that. It's like someone coming to me for one session of marriage therapy and they go, I tried.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't have, you blew this marriage for 17 years. I've got 1 hour. I'm good, but I'm not magical. I'm sure there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, I would tell you that, like, we have a, that's I want to say at least 2 clients a year. They don't even know it, though. You know, they don't even know. I was telling you right before we started recording, I recently had a client who we love. We had such an amazing and positive experience with him. But 5 months into his contract, which, by the way, every single woman we set up with him, they all wanted a second date. So I knew that he was great. Like, I was like, you're great. You know, he went on second dates with a lot of women. Like, it was a very positive contract. And then 5 months in, he goes, Maria, team, I need to back out. And I was like, did you meet someone? He's like, no, I just realized, like, basically, I'm looking for this kind of woman. You've set me up with this kind of woman for the last 5 months. And all of these kinds of women like me. They want to go back out with me. But for some reason, I don't want to go out more with them. That the person that I thought I was meant to be with is not that person. I need to go back to the drawing board and figure out. And I was like, oh, you know, I didn't say this to him. I'm assuming he said, I think he said in his own email, he's like, I need to go to therapy.
I think he's really right. And I think he's going to uncover something really important. And he's going to be married in a heartbeat once he figures it
out. The moment he figures it out, it's like, boom, it's gonna be there. And I'm certain of it. And, you know,
what a great guy.
I love it.
To own that, to know that and say, you know what? It's me.
It's not a lack of opportunities. It was not a lack of women. I wish more clients, I don't know if you experienced this in your office, but I wish more of my clients saw that sometimes, like, who you asked me to introduce you to, I found them.
Yes.
And they were enthusiastic to meet you.
Yes.
Why you're not in a relationship likely has nothing to do with me.
Right. Or them.
Or them. Yeah. It might have to do with you. And that's okay. At least if we can acknowledge it, then we can work on it.
Yeah.
But if we can't acknowledge it, it's going to be hard. It's going to be a really hard road for both of us to work this through.
Well, especially when you get that answer, I don't know, it just wasn't there, which you hear a lot of times and you're like, what's it? Really, what is it? What is this mysterious, miraculous thing you're looking for?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, I have one client who he'll say after every date, like, he didn't enjoy the date. Meanwhile, you know, I do ask the women for how the date went. They're like, oh my God, it was wonderful. We had such a great time. We were out for this many hours. And I'm like, okay, in retrospect, like, you're thinking like the next day or 2 days later, like, it just wasn't a good, you know, I didn't have fun on this date. But I'm like, the women though did. Like, how is this possible?
Right. Is he lying? Is he lying on the date?
Is he acting on the date?
Is he lying following?
I don't know.
But there is something there to be interesting.
Or he needs me to know you didn't do a good job. So I'm going to tell you didn't do a good job. Because I, you know, if I know what it's like when I set up a bad day. I've set up 5,000 first dates. I have a few bad ones in there, okay? But it's not typical for people to be on 2 very different dates.
It's not.
You know, so that's why I'm always like, okay, there is a couple things in your book I want to talk about.
Okay.
Finally, we can go to the book. All right, so you talked about conscious communication, thinking before speaking. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that, because, you know, you seem to be a person who works with people, with couples, in communicating better. How does that convert to, like, when someone is initially dating and they want to set expectations of, like, listen, I'm a texter, you don't text, maybe we can call each other every day? Or, like, you know, how do we set that up to be consciously communicating with each other? And what does it mean to be consciously communicating?
Well, I think you've given a perfect example, so thank you, which is bringing up those things that are important to you to say, this is important to me. Can you work with me on this? Or how can we come together to a place of agreement? We expect things from others, and then we're disappointed in them when we don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a huge believer of there should be no expectations. There should be requests. And if the request is like, I'm not willing to do that for you, then that's somebody, you know, that's your partner's truth. But it's not an agree. It needs to get to agreement. So in my work, I move from expectation, assumption, and move to, well, did you have their agreement? Did they say that they would do that? Because if they didn't, they might not know. Mm-hmm. So they're not trying to, you know, for you to be bummed. They might not be careless or rude or thoughtless. They simply might not know. So what I tell people is unless you get a yes, you don't have agreement. Now, if you have agreement, you can say, hey, you didn't come through. But the place where I start with conscious communication is the aspect of I am responsible for my thoughts, my beliefs, my feelings, and my actions as you are for you. Mm-hmm. And anytime I'm pissed off, angry, mad, I'm the person who's having the problem because I am 100% not accepting you in the way that you are. I'm the believer that no one should have to change for another. It should be that I choose to change because this better suits me or this will help our relationship. And so I want to, but I think our world turns it into you're supposed to be this way for me. You didn't do this and all other guys have done this for me. You know, I'm supposed to have, and the other person hasn't said yes to. So I moved to the place of working with people to say, and if you don't like what someone's doing, you've got choices. How do you take care of you in that? Do you say like, this is uncomfortable for me. I am going to request that you don't engage or, you know, call me names or what have you. And if the person says not willing to, then you've got the choice. Do I step out? Like, how do I handle this? This is my problem, but we make it the others. And the challenge with that, the whole victim mentality, is I now have to wait on you to let me be okay. I am 100% not going to do that. I get to help myself be okay. Mm-hmm. So if you don't treat me in a way that I want to be treated and you're not willing to care about how it impacts me, like I will step out.
Do you ever work with clients in this capacity when it comes to like communicating what they hope for or want sexually?
Yeah, the whole chapter in there. Absolutely.
Tell me more about that.
So though we may have been with many partners or none, every sexual encounter is new. And every sexual encounter feels new. Our body doesn't feel the same all the time. So my viewpoint is you will have no idea of how to please me. You might be super gifted and talented, and dear God, I hope you are. But I need to guide you on what I want. And if I'm not willing to do that, then I'm kind of hoping you can figure me out. So I tell clients, do you want to have great sex? And they all say, well, they don't all say, many say yes. And I'm like, it's up to you to let your partner know what you like, what turns you on. So one thing that I have couples do after they've had some wonderful sexual experiences, talk about it. Like, what did you like best? Where did you really get turned on? I also do something that's really beautiful, I think, which is a day of pleasing your partner.
What's that?
So you'll set up the stage in ways that you ask them that they like. It might be lotion, might be a bubble bath, flowers. There's a lot of things you can do with tantra, you know, with like little rakes or ribbons or ice or whipped cream. Stay away from hot fudge and honey. It's a mess, unless it's mouth only. It's just a mess in other body parts. Like play, have fun, you know, shave, do different things. But my viewpoint is, let me find out what turns you on.
Right.
And so, like, I'm going to play with your toes. And do you like them kissed? Do you like them licked? If you give a man or a woman the opportunity for you to just explore their body and see what happens, where do they? Like, I'm like, oh, awesome. It's right here. It's right here. It's right here. Our bodies are, like, fabulously erogenous, but we tend to go for a couple of places and they're heaven, but there's a lot of others. So when you explore your partner's body and just right. Let them know, like, I want to arouse you. Like,
I want to seduce you and tantalize you. You have this wealth of information. And then your partner looks at you as, oh my God, you totally want to turn me on.
And the viewpoint is not to move to sex, unless you want to. It's just, I want to bring you pleasure. I want to find out what turns your body on. And I'm a huge advocate for keep trying new, fun, playful things. Mm-hmm. But if we turn it into not that you didn't do this, you don't do this, I hate this, why do you do this, and move it into, I think I'd like it with ice, or could you make it wetter, or could you stay there a little bit longer? We're embarrassed to tell our partner how to please us. Just think about that. I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable that you don't know what to do with my body, so I just won't say anything, and it won't work, and I'll think you feel better about you, but I won't think you really know how to do it. I'm going to be pissed because it's not going to work. You're going to keep doing it that way because you think it didn't work, because I'm lying to you that it worked. Like, we create this huge mess. If I don't tell you, I don't really like that, but I love this, and you keep doing the I don't like, that's on me. It's not on you. You're trying to please me.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. I do know, though, that there are people who sometimes will get frustrated by getting the notes, and they'll say stuff like, well, I've never had a problem getting a person off this way. And then that person can hear that.
So I would respond to that, and I'd say, I am so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
Right.
I didn't mean to hurt you. And I am so
glad
that sucking
toes has turned on every single woman you've ever been
with. Mm-hmm. It creeps me out. And you're with me. So if you want to, you can suck my toes, but I'm going to be like borderline revolted and I'm so sorry, and I'll do it, but it's not going to turn me on. I am not saying you're not an amazing lovemaker. I'm just saying, do you want to be amazing for me? Ooh. And if the answer is no, you want to be amazing for all the others that you've been with, then okay, I need to step out, because this just simply isn't my favorite position.
Right.
This is my favorite position, and I'd like to explore that with you. I think there's a huge place to say, I am sharing, I'm so sorry in the way that I presented this. I in no way was trying to hurt you. I wasn't trying to tell you anything derogatory. I was simply saying, I'd love for you to love me this way.
Right.
And I hope you will do that with me. That's the compassion to the connection to the communication. If it's don't do this, I hate this.
Right.
You don't know. So I bring things up. I'll say to people who are very important to me, do I have permission to share something that I'm feeling that I think is important? And then I wait for them to say yes. And sometimes they say, I would prefer you don't. Mm-hmm. And I say,
okay.
And if they say yes, if it's a tough one, I'll say, thank you. I want to make certain you can receive this with love. And then they go, oh, damn. And I'm like, yeah, because I really love you. I really love you. I'm having a really hard time with, and I want to feel closer to you. And this kind of pulls me back, and I don't want to. I want to love you better. So can you help me in loving you better? By hearing this is problematic for me. I'm owning it's problematic for me. You don't have to change it. And I think I'm going to keep pulling back, and I don't want to. So could you help me here? And most people are like, oh my God, yes. There's a way to present everything as a request. And I should say that. Sometimes you just have to make a demand and a statement. But most things in communication can be presented with a request. And with compassion for the other person's feelings. Because I feel I'm responsible for my thoughts, feelings, actions. If I do say something that you don't like, I know my intention is for that not to be the case. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I will take responsibility for the fact that I'm sorry it disturbed you. But I will also say that wasn't my intent. What's going on that you were thinking it might be? And how can I help you feel a little safer with me? I just want to be able to tell you, like, this is what turns me on. And I'd like you to know. I had one guy that used to take my hair and he'd put it behind my ear.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Took my whole body. I'm like, oh.
And is that a good?
So good.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just like my whole body was like, It just felt so intimate and so
loving.
It's
really intimate, yeah.
I told a guy about it because he asked. And he would take my other ear and go, and I'm like,
no, not
that wasn't quite it.
No.
And I had to tell him, I'm like, you know, I think it was something about the speed and the, but I really appreciate that you're doing that. So every time he would do it and it didn't feel the same, I just recognized he's really trying. And that's really sweet. And I'm going to need to find something where we're more suited to what we do. But if you want to have an amazing relationship, there's a place of letting yourself have an amazing relationship. And a lot of that comes in with talking. How can I make this better for you? And I need to know if you're willing to make this better for me.
Right. Is the way that you're communicating right now, is this one of the ways of like the three hard conversations that
yes
you talk
and
about
no.
in your book?
Because the way I talk about in everything, mm-hmm. but the three hard conversations are sex,
okay,
money,
okay,
and family.
Wow.
And those are the places where marriages die.
Tell me more about that, because here it is in chapter 14. What are the three most difficult conversations? And you said it's sex, money, and family.
Yeah.
And that's where relationships go to die.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that. I'm sure we can guess why they're hard, but like, can you briefly tell us like what makes them hard and like how we should be tackling those conversations?
Sure. I'd love to. Sex. Most of us aren't honest.
Okay.
Most of us don't share what we really want. We don't work in trying to cultivate the relationship in that way. A lot of people just kind of think the other person's supposed to figure it out or should be amazing. Mm. We don't talk about frequency. We don't talk about toys. We don't talk about positions. Most people don't do a whole lot of exploring there. And so making certain that you're pleasing your partner and that you are pleased, a lot of women lie. And, you know, they fake the orgasm because they think the guy's going to feel better that he made her come. And there's also the place for the guy needing his ego rubbed that he did. But if he didn't, it's better to help him figure out how to make it happen than have him forever, you know, and that's not what turns you on. So people don't talk about sex. There's also the challenge that men feel closer having sex and following sex. And women need to feel close to have sex.
Right.
Huge important. We're so different there. And there's a lot of communication about that that's really important. Exclusivity. You know, that's something that needs to be talked about. People don't. Is it okay to text somebody else? Is it okay to flirt with somebody else? All sorts of challenges when we're starting to cross those boundaries. So sex is a huge one. And it's such a beautiful, awesome thing. You want to keep it alive and vital and exciting. And you got to be creative to do that when you're with someone for 25 years. Money, how we spend it, what our goals are, if we're being honest about it. I think being on a budget's a really good idea. Do you each have money that you can spend freely on your own so you're not having to ask permission?
Right.
But there's a lot of challenges with money. A lot of control.
We've spent
with
a few
money.
Episodes the last couple months talking about money. So.
Control with money, control
listen
with
to
sex.
Those episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a no, totally. I agree.
And then family, and as you know from coming from the Greeks, it's so important.
Yeah. Like, in what way? Why is family important?
Well,
what
does it mean to you? Mm. How involved are they? What alliances do you have? Have you made promises like, yes, I'll take care of you when you're old?
Yeah.
Have you had that? You will always be at our house on Christmas or for Hanukkah. Have you promised that? You must, you know, do these certain things. So in family, how does the family feel about how you're going to raise your children? Religion, you know, holidays. There's so many questions about that.
And it's so funny you just mentioned religion because when people ask me where does family orientedness fall into, like as a matchmaker, when I talk about compatibility, when someone asks me, where does family orientedness fall into those compatibility pillars? I always say it's spiritual because it's not spirituality. I think people confuse it for religion. And it's like, no, at the very end, if we were to look at like, my company's named Agape Match, right? And Aristotle defined agape, not as God's love, as a lot of American Christians have defined it, mm-hmm. But as a soul's recognition of another soul. And it has nothing to, you know, spirituality is for some people that equates to believing in God. But for other people, it's like checking into your soul and like what's going to nourish your soul. And to me, it's like if you are someone who values family, that is, these are your soulmates.
Right.
And I always try to remind people when they work with me, like they'll say stuff like, you know, they have to be family oriented. And I always say to them, do they value family? Because there are people who really want to be, who are family oriented, who want to value family, but they come from families that they can't do that with.
Yes. And what does family oriented mean?
Yeah.
Does it mean that I spend a lot of time with them? Does it mean they always come first?
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean they really love us? It doesn't mean the same thing. Some people spend a ton of time with their family. Mm-hmm. They don't really like them, but they spend a ton of time because you go for Sunday dinner.
Yeah.
There's other people who don't get together that often and are devoted.
Right.
My kids call or text me every day unless my son's deployed. They are devoted.
Right.
So there's the place of, well, what does that mean? But there's those questions for everything. What does love mean? What does intimacy mean? What does family mean? So one thing I have couples do is a mission statement. Like, who are you going to be together? Let's find out how well suited you are. Because if your mission statements for life don't fit together, there's going to be some challenges. Yeah. So who do we want to be as a couple? How do we help each other, you know, rise up in who we're going to be, and family and faith and money and sex, like all of those need to be in there.
Yesterday I was talking to someone at my community and at the church I go to, and she said, I love this question. She's a single mom. She's been raising her kid. Her kid is in me and my husband's theater group, and we love him. Like, he's such a great kid, like just really kind and like social, like just a good kid, you know? And so she asked me, like, what kind of kids are you trying to raise? And I thought about it for like a quick second. I didn't think, because I think about this all the time. And I was like, I just really want my kids to be kind, respectful, and productive. I said it in that order. And she's like, that'll, you know, then now look at your spouse, look at you and your spouse. Do you, because it's like one thing to say those words and not show that. And it's a whole other thing to like, well, you already live this. So why wouldn't, you know, it's our hope that, you know, your kids will emulate that too.
Yes. But right. There is a place of, do you cultivate that?
Right.
And I would add like creative or playful.
Ooh.
Because you want your kids to love life.
Yeah.
You want them to enjoy.
Oh, I'm going
to
add that in there.
Yeah.
Creative and playful.
Mm-hmm. Awe.
I like that.
Wonder. Yeah. I homeschooled my kids for years.
Oh,
because
okay.
I wanted the world to be dazzling.
This is what makes you California, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like in New Jersey, that would never.
I lived in New York for a year, and my nickname was Granola.
Oh, yeah.
And I understood. It was so funny.
Episode that aired this week, we were talking about like the kinds of moms you can be. And I was like, a crunchy mom? Yeah. And it's funny because I have a client who he's dying to meet someone who is a granola. That's the word he put, granola or crunchy. But she also has to like, you know, be hot and like live in Manhattan. And I was like, where am I supposed to find this granola hottie in Manhattan? Like, you know, like they don't live, like a lot of them don't live here. They live in California, you know, like, what are you talking about? So for any granola crunchy women in their 40s,
we're hot in Manhattan.
Please contact my team. We got to talk. Anyway.
But there's the place of saying those things. But my viewpoint is, yeah, you want your kids to emulate you. Of course. But there's something about speaking into, it brings in the intention. It's why I start my day and I say, God, help me today, like see the beauty you want me to see, hear what you want me to hear, and really share what it is that you want me to share and help me be grateful.
I love that.
For this day. I could start my day, pop out of bed, get ready. But when I start that way, I'm all of a sudden looking a little bit more, listening a little bit more. And when I get into a place of a challenge, I'm like, this is important. Like, recognize you're in a challenge. There's something important to learn here. That's a different mentality than, damn it, once again, crappy day. So with children, and children are magical, with children, there's that place of letting them know, I'm so glad you're here. I have wanted you so badly. I can't wait to figure out how I help you raise yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're going to show me that. And I'm going to make a whole bunch of mistakes, but I am going to learn, and we are going to have such a great time. And if you really listen, your children do guide you.
Yeah.
They do know on a lot of levels what they need. I told my kids.
They hold up a mirror for sure. Like I feel like, because I do tell my kids, oh my God, I'm so lucky. What did I do to win the lottery? If you got, you know, like I constantly tell them, like probably every morning. But man, do they throw up a mirror sometimes when you're like, when you're acting up?
I did something with my kids that's so beautiful. Every month I'd say, where did I love you the most deeply?
Oh.
And then they'd tell me, I'd say, thank you. I'm going to keep trying to do that. Where am I blowing it? And they knew I was asking. So if I ask, any answer you give me is okay.
These are older kids though, right? Like,
no, I started young.
Okay.
I started young. So they would say stuff like Mac, when he was really young, he'd say, we need to go to the park more. I'm like, okay.
Hello.
Okay, let's figure this out. Let's go to the park more. And Sienna would be like, I want to be painting more. I'm like, okay, let's paint more. And then as I got older, they got tougher. Like my daughter said, you're a martyr. And I went, oh my God, I totally am. This is going to be so hard for me. Thank you for believing in me that I can learn how to not be. Damn, this is going to be hard. Be patient with me. And I will. But there's the place of when your kids know that you're concerned about where their heart gets hurt with you or whether they feel missed by you, there's gold there. My kids share with me the things that people would never believe a kid would share with their mom. But they know whatever they say, I'm going to try my hardest to help them with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to blame them or judge them. I'm going to say, okay, thank you for being honest. How, you know, how's this going for you? What do we need to do? And they're like, I'm so sorry, mom. I'm like, okay. So what do you need now? How do we help you with this? How do we take this to a place that it grows? Our world shames.
Mm.
And it's so sad because we miss an opportunity to help. Something's not right. Do you want to put the person down or do you want to try to raise the person up?
Right.
We do it wrong a lot. As parents, we do it wrong a lot. And it's important to look at that, like your person. What am I saying? You know, am I kind of giving you a backhanded slap? Or am I saying, you know, I hope you think I'm amazing. Wouldn't that be great if you thought you got the prize? Let's see if you can figure that out. Am I a prize for you? Maybe I am. Like there's ways to use those expressions that we think are important to us, but that like lift the other up.
Right.
When we lift ourselves up to someone else, like we're off. The key is let me lift you up.
Right.
Because then we're both up.
Right.
But we tend to do it the opposite way. I'm going to push you down and try to make you think I'm awesome. Or I'm going to tell myself I'm horrible and hope you pull me up. And neither of those are helpful. But what's helpful is saying, like, what could I do to help you?
And this is why they call you the Reframe Queen.
It is.
What a way to end today's episode. Dr. Heather, thank you so much for coming on the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. I love it. Every time you got a question for me, you like reframed the communication. We got to see it in action.
Mm-hmm.
Where can people find you?
My website is the easiest. So
great.
www.drheatherbrowne.com. So drheatherbrowne.com.
Perfect. I'm going to include that in the show notes.
Perfect.
I'm also going to include a link so that people can purchase your book.
Love it.
And we will, you know, thank you again for coming to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast.
It has been a delight and a blast.
Awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. And thank you for listening to this week's Ask a Matchmaker podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, head on over to the reviews, give it a 5-star review, or if you're on YouTube, tell us in the comments what your favorite part of this week's episode was. Go check out Dr. Heather, the show, like I said, her link to her book and her website are in the show notes. And of course, you know how we end every single episode, be lovable, but more importantly, be likable. See you next week.